This is a Beyond Cast Cerberus podcast. Available on iTunes, Audio Boom, Stitcher.com, Player FM, and BeyondCastCerberus.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's the podcast with a K. I'm Christian Corney. This is James McLean. Hi, James.
Hello.
Hello there. We're convening today to discuss the sort of emergency podcast. How governments have emergency budgets and things like that, or they meet in their Cobra briefing room in the UK, and this irrelevant really. But yeah, there's stuff been going on at Comic-Con. There's some Doctor Who and Class trailers in circulation. Now, I thought we thought it might be a good idea to talk about what's been going on. So you're kind of getting a bonus podcast out of this.
Yeah.
Not like they pay for it, so.
No, exactly. I'm cold. I'm putting on a scarf in my room.
Okay. Is that a Tom Baker scarf?
It's not actually, no. It's a nice warm scarf, which doesn't minimize my mobility.
Good.
Unlike his.
Good.
So
you can't trip over pursuers with it though, presumably.
No, unfortunately I'm in a situation right now where, because I've got this headset on, I'm unable to get anything jacket like which I can put around my shoulders and not put over my head because of the aforementioned headset.
I see.
Yeah, you see, that's the problem. And
it's one of life's little tragedies, isn't
it? It's one of those things you don't really think about until you're wearing a headset, you're cold, you've got no jacket nearby, and there's a scarf in the wardrobe next to you. So this Doctor Who thing, what is it about?
There was a Comic-Con at the weekend. I think it was New York. I'm not entirely sure because I'm just going to sound a little bit ignorant, but they do tend to be quite ubiquitous these days, and they do tend to blend all into one, don't they?
Oh yes, absolutely.
So it's particularly the big ones, these big industrial Comic Cons, because big industrial events now, aren't they? They're not like little rooms like they were 20 years ago with
Anthony Daniels, Peter Mayhew, and
those guys, and you know, actual people involved with actual comics.
Absolutely. Plus Peter Mayhew and Jerry Bullock. And those people,
Now they're big industrial events with like huge rooms with huge talks, and you know, they're like press conferences for fans, aren't they? Basically,
absolutely.
One of those took place at the weekend, and
Places to have an explosively bad PR publicity for Shatner's agency. That was fun.
Oh, that was the Midlands, wasn't it?
That was the Midlands one. Yeah, that was interesting. So yeah, they can be all sorts of things.
So we're at Comic-Con. We learned a few things. There's about the upcoming Series 10, but perhaps the most interesting thing is this. So Moffat starts talking about some new writers. We've got some new writers. We're not rolling them all out now. Oh, I could do one fun thing. We've got Mike Bartlett coming in. He's just done The Haunted Hub, a brilliant script from Mike Bartlett. He wrote the show Dr. Foster, and that was a show with Sarah Lancashire, I think. Which was a big series in the UK. And he says that he's a brilliant, brilliant playwright and he's a long-time fan of Doctor Who. And then he says, oh, what the hell, for the first time ever, someone who wrote for the classic series, and I'm not saying who, is going to write an episode of the new series. Deal with that, he says. And there's been a bit of speculation about who this might be.
Mm.
Have you got any feelings about who it might be? Or who would you like it to be?
That's a different question, isn't it?
Mm.
Who would I like it to be? I know there's been some talk within our outer circles of Ross Munro, who did Survival, which I think could be interesting. I don't know. I mean, it's so hard because the problem is, and going into, I know we're going into Beyond Casterbrus territory again, but with you know, I was watching some of Red Dwarf this week, the new ones, and it's just a reminder that, you know, I don't want to damn Doug Naylor because there is some interesting stuff he's doing in those, but the stuff he's doing now doesn't feel half the half as tight as the stuff him and Rob Grant did back in 89, 88, or even 92.
Yeah.
So you kind of wonder, can you be sure that what you'll get from someone who wrote 30 years ago is going to be of that same sort of, even the same sort of tone and style, or will it be totally different?
Well, that's why I think it's got to be, and I might be wrong, I may have overlooked one, but I think it's got to be one of three writers who's still working in television.
Right. That would make sense.
Which would, for me, that would be Rona Munro, who's had something recently on TV, Stephen Gallagher, who's done an episode of Lucky Man, Stan Lee's Lucky Man, recently, right. So he's still working. That's Warriors Gate and Terminus. And outside bet, Bob Baker.
Interesting that you've made him an outside bet. Why?
I just feel he might be an outside bet because he does... Well, he's busy with his canine series, isn't he? And there's a canine movie in development as well, isn't there? So I think he would be more inclined to be working on his own things in Dot 2, but that's why I consider him an outside bet.
Bob Baker, yeah, and Rona Munro, not Ross Munro, I don't know why I said that, but yeah, I made another faux pas early this morning in an email to someone that I meant to be interviewing and called them by their last name rather than their first name in the opening. I don't know how I did that. I was multitasking and I felt absolutely awful. But yeah, so it's not a good day for me on names. Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're very, very smart to just really sort of pigeon it down to who is actually still a working writer, because I think that is a massive factor for in some ways for the reasons I was saying as well, that, you know, 30 years is a long time.
Exactly, yeah.
Bob Baker would actually make a lot of sense, even though, as you say, he's busy. There's a certain amount of circles which keeps him in the same sort of loop, if you see what I mean, that might make him might benefit him and his professional agenda as much as it might benefit, you know, Doctor Who from having, as I say, a classic name there. I would think Munro. I don't know why. Possibly because Survival has a feel to it.
If it is Munro, then Moffat gets to tick two boxes, doesn't he? He gets classic Doctor Who, and he also gets
a female
writer. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah.
Not that we're condoning the idea of box ticking at all.
No, but inevitably he is a producer, and yeah, there is a certain amount of box ticking that's involved for any producer. Yeah, absolutely. It'll be interesting to see how that sort of that gap is bridged. Mm. How many others have? I mean, not obviously for the show, but I'm thinking more books and audios, because there has obviously been a few writers.
Yeah, well, Ben Aronovich has been involved with the audios, and he's also got this Rivers of London series. That's been ongoing, this novel series, and a comic series as well, I think I'm right in saying. So, you know, there's one. There's Mark Platt's written dozens of big finishes. Ian Briggs as well, I think he's done Big Finish.
I mean, they're three people along Simon Road that I would love. Aronovich, Briggs, and Platt, I would love to see do the divide, because they were very much at the forefront of moving into the sort of more contemporary approaches to narrative writing that suits the new shows. So I would love to see one of them, any of that sort of season 26 lot, 25-26 lot, do something. I think that'd be great.
It would. I agree. So that's the big thing that came from Comic-Con, I think. Whichever one it was. Was it New York? Could have been.
I think it was New York.
Yeah, okay.
Don't know why, but I think it was, yeah.
Could have been, you know, it could have been some other place beginning with New or York. Or
aside from York.
Aside from York, yeah. Maybe it was New York. Anyway, that's Comic-Con. Now, there's a few other things going on, which we have overlooked in the past few weeks because we've kind of been pre-recording our podcasts. Mm-hmm. It's a busy business is running beyond Casterbus. We've got three ongoing podcasts, one of which hasn't had an update for a while, so we're going to have to get onto that shortly. And that was... that was before I realised that we had a new series of Ripper Street starting this week on Amazon, which is going to be exciting. So we've got a Class trailer and we've got a first look at the Doctor Who Christmas special. Now, have you watched either of these?
I have watched both of them.
You've watched both of them. That's a relief.
Yeah.
Class trailer has has a warning at the beginning. I'm going to insert it here for the listener so they can listen to the class trailer. But it starts on the video version with guidance, contains some violence and some upsetting scenes, which is not generally what you get from the Hooniverse.
Do you know the feeling of dread? Just beyond what you see. Just beyond what you know. There's something out there waiting for you.
What have you seen? Was it a shadow?
What do you know about shadows?
We're in terrible danger.
What is going on in here? You're talking to a boy.
It's time to do something.
What are we supposed to do about it? I'm not made of glass. Tougher than they think.
Would you believe me if I said I was from another planet?
God, yeah.
Great.
Whoever you are, I am what waits for you.
I used to be the caretaker here.
You heard of me, haven't you?
You can't seriously expect these juveniles to deal with whatever's going to come through these tears in space and time.
Through to what?
It's like a hellmouth. All that town in Once Upon a Time.
All the Vampire Diaries.
We watch Vampire Diaries.
Everyone's very attractive.
Yes, it's true.
Don't forget to subscribe to the official Doctor Who YouTube channel.
What were your thoughts on the trailer?
I didn't see anything that was particularly upsetting in there, particularly to me. But unless it was a warning about Capaldi's face, which would be a bit cruel, but he was looking very stern.
He was looking very stern, yeah.
But I mean, no, I like the trailer.
What do you think of it? Yeah, yeah.
Yes, I did like the trailer. There's no doubt. I can't, and not because Capaldi was in it or any of that sort of usual fan mantra. It was just a nicely
fantra.
Oh, yeah, fantra. Yeah, it was just nicely toned. His delivery was very, very evocative. The script, you know, the scripting for the just seemed to work, and the imagery, it felt fairly adult, really. You know, a young adult, obviously, because there's obviously lots of kids involved, but it didn't feel like Torchwood, if you see what I mean. So, yeah, I thought it was a good pitch there.
Yeah, one of the complaints that have been levelled at Torchwood repeatedly over the years, but by myself in particular, is that although it was described as an adult show, it was very childish.
Yes.
It was very kind of, lower sixth in terms of that's just instantly aged me, hasn't it? It's very like aimed at teenagers and not grown-ups, I think is what
and
I'm
it wasn't there, just it wasn't just, you know, people saying, oh, it's the silly sex and everything. It wasn't that. Just the whole tone felt very young.
Yeah.
The stories didn't feel like they were very complete or well considered. Characters didn't feel like there was much true growth there, or it didn't have those sort of things for adults. It wasn't just a sexuality thing, which I know a lot of people hooked onto. It was the whole thing. I think the whole thing got a sort of a better tone to it. The sexuality would have seemed less issue for people.
So, given that, I know we can't say much about Class because you know it's probably not going to get that many TV trailers because it's an online show, isn't it? Initially,
but at the same time, I mean, it's kind of interesting. I mean, when it was first announced last year, and we were not very impressed by the idea, and obviously still not horrendously impressed by the idea. But it's good to show that, you know, it's good to see that there's a trailer is showing some encouraging signs.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. The reasons that we weren't particularly enthused. Well, if Doctor Who's got time to do a spin-off, then the spin-off's got to be Torchwood, perhaps. But at the same time, does Doctor Who really have time for a spin-off? We're not getting enough Doctor Who episodes. You know, we've got a massive gap between Doctor Who episodes this year. And it does feel very odd to be sort of like, when you've got an you've got the show, you know, kind of appearing sporadically since 2011, to then shoehorn a new show in.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I don't know. I don't like... I'm not over keen on the idea of spin-offs. I'm not over keen on the idea of kids. I'd be very surprised if it lives up to its trailer, to be honest. Uh-huh. But at the same time, I think possibly one of the reasons, I think always, is as soon as you bring in teenagers are the most unlikely heroes I think you'd ever encounter. And that can work in comics. It can work
books.
In books.
Yeah.
To some degree, but on television or film, when you actually see teenagers being heroes, unless it's utterly fantastical, it's hard to believe, because teenagers, just as we all were, tend to be very self-focused, very interested in what they want of the world, not what the world is doing for them right now. Not very. We didn't have that sort of initiative and sort of guile that you see on television. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It just kind of feels like we're still in this position that we still put the skills of experience that come from experience onto the heads of kids because they look nicer. And that still bugs me a bit.
Let's be honest, 15-year-olds are more interested about what's in their trousers and what's in the charts.
Yeah,
than
and we're
saving the world.
Absolutely. And we were all like that. That's not meant to be disparaging to any teenagers today. You know, when you're young like that, you're working yourself out. You're very self-focused. You're very peer-focused as well. And unless class does something different, which it might, you don't tend to be in the mindset that you see on television. And I think that's kind of why I like things. Sometimes I quite like James Bond and Persons of Interest and all those shows which have sort of slightly older action heroes, because you can at least believe them in the grounds that, you know, they've had the time to find out who they are, decide what they're going to do, and have the skills to back it up. But when you see teenagers doing all that, again, it feels like the Robin syndrome, that, you know, you've got stories about Robin when you really want Batman. And if, you know, Robin was the lead hero in all these, you'd be thinking, well, I suppose he is in some of these things nowadays. But I think the issue a lot of the time is that kids are very hard to believe in. And sometimes that also levels a Doctor Who, obviously, as we've said in the past, with the superhero companion. If the companions were just a little more down to earth, I think it was also why I never minded Susan. And she, I know Caroline Ford always felt that she had nothing to do and she wasn't very proactive, but teenagers don't tend to be. She felt quite real in that sense, even though she wasn't a real teenager. So, yeah.
Okay, speaking of superheroes,
yeah,
we've got the Doctor Who Christmas episode, which hasn't got a trailer, but it's got a kind of first look behind the scenes with a few clips in there. And there is it's called The Return of Dr. Mysterio, and it features a superhero. Now, personally, I find this an interesting angle to take. It's hooked me in because this is something Doctor Who's never done before. So that I like it when Doctor Who tries new things. I might not like the results, Love and Monsters. You know, but and a few episodes last year, the one with the eyeglass. But this one's different, I think. What do you think?
Well, absolutely. I mean, to me, it has done this before, but not on television. There was several books in Head Games was one, and I'm trying to think of the first one.
Conundrum. It was Steve Lyons.
Conundrum. Thank you. Yes, Steve Lyons books. That sort of covered this area. You could put it out of press, push a little bit of the mind robber, but I think you would be pushing it. I just don't know. Again, I'm cautious that the Last Christmas had me suspicious. I had me and Brian, certainly. I can't remember about yourself. I think you were the same. Suspicious about the Santa factor.
Last Christmas was the one with River Song, wasn't it, last year's?
Yeah, but it was called Last Christmas, wasn't it? No,
that was the one before.
Yeah, but what was it called?
That was called Last Christmas. I
liked it. Called Last Christmas. That's what I'm saying. But when we were on the run up to that, we were all a little uncertain with the addition of Santa Claus in there, whether it would really just end up feeling like a bad festive satire or And I kind of feel that with this one. I could be proved wrong, but, you know, I think there's always a danger when you sort of try and play a loose parody or loose association to a very complex and visible genre as things like superheroes. Superheroes is not like it was when The Mind Robber did it, where there were a few silly comics that people would, you know, read and parents would try and set on fire, you know, and you know, you should not be reading these, you should be reading books, that sort of universe. We're no longer in that sort of age. We're in an age where everyone is very acutely aware of superheroes, very acutely aware of the nuances of superheroes and, you know, what makes ones workable and what ones don't. And I think when you start playing around with that as a sort of parody or a homage, you've got to be really careful, because if you get it wrong, you just look stupid and you make the show look stupid. It makes it look uninformed or out of touch. So I'm a little concerned about that. I think sometimes, you know, that you can play too close to the bone. And it's just too big a pop culture genre really at the moment to just be able to sort of simply poke fun at it without, you know, without actually having it ending up making you look like the one that's the idiot. So yeah, I'm a bit uncertain about where that's going to go, but like with Last Christmas, just have to see. I didn't find the mockumentary or the trailer documentary, sorry, making of whatever the hell it was, made me want to watch the show at all.
Okay.
So it was quite the opposite way around. Class, funnily enough, Class had me really interested, which was this show that I was really not looking forward to at all. And the Doctor Who Christmas trailer had me utterly turned off as soon as I saw the superhero thing. I thought, I've just, you know, it's not even new. People have pastiched and played with superheroes as a genre in shows too many times. You're not doing anything new here. You're right, Christian, it is new for Doctor Who, but it's not new at all as a product of culture. Superheroes have been constantly poked at, with fun or with respect, say with The Watchmen, you know, for decades. This is like, you know, you should have done this 20 years ago if you're going to do something groundbreaking on this. You're at the back end of the train here. So you better do something really different to make it work.
Well, let's not forget that Matt Lucas is in there.
I couldn't help forget, because he was there gurning away through it. It only looked like he was enjoying it, bless him. But again, I still feel that unless, again, they're doing something
Matt
really
Lucas
clever with him.
Gurning, perish the thought.
It's a shame, because I was to say, he seems a nice guy and he's a good comedy actor, but I just don't know if it fits what Doctor Who should be. And I'll re-emphasise what I said before. You know, it's... Doctor Who doesn't need that much comedy, because the central character is the pivot of the entertainment, the comedy entertainment. So you can let the rest of the world play fairly straight, because you've got him there. You don't need comedy elements to a character who is in part stand-up. That is, the Doctor is essentially a stand-up character since Tom Baker. You know, for 40% of the time, perhaps more sometimes, he's playing stand-up.
Yeah.
So why do you need comedians in there? To me, it's just like...
Or comic characters.
Or, you know, or comedians playing comic characters. You know, you don't need them. You don't need Hale and Pace, Ken Dodd. You know, all these sort of... Bless them all. But, you know, they just don't... They never really work, because Doctor Who doesn't need comedy insertion, because it has enough comedy built within the character since the 70s. So yeah, it's like I hope you've got something going there, something. I hope you give him something dramatic, something to make us actually see him as something more than just a silly gag. And if you don't, then that's just going to really grind.
Okay. There's just one other thing I wanted to point out about this before I just go on to our last point. Doctor Mysterio, the return of Doctor Mysterio. Doctor Who is called in Spanish Doctor Mysterio.
Right, okay, so that's where it comes from, doesn't it?
That must be where it comes from, yes. Now, there is one last thing to talk about, which I didn't tell you about, but I've only just found out about this while I was having my lunch. And this is the fact that it's not directly Doctor Who, but it is likely to play a part in the casting of the next Doctor. Because Daniel Craig has said he still wants to be James Bond.
Right.
Now, one of the people who was suggested for James Bond was Aidan Turner.
Right.
But he'd also been suggested as the next Doctor after Peter Capaldi. So, you know, these are all suggestions, are all rumours and things like that, but the fact that, you know, the Bond gig isn't a gig for anyone at the moment, because Daniel Craig's saying, I'm still doing this, kind of opens the door for Doctor Who a little bit, because it means that certain people are more likely to be available.
Yeah.
Should they decide to go down that route.
Should they?
Should they, yes.
I don't know. I think it's an interesting situation now. I mean, depending on how well Christmas does, then obviously... in some ways, and we've not really talked about this, but this Christmas episode could be fairly pivotal for the show, in the sense of the direction for next year or the confidence in next year, because whoever they're going to cast, if they've not already cast, which I don't think they have, would be cast probably sometime next year. And how well, correct me if I'm wrong here, I'm feeling a bit fuzzy today anyway, but
sure.
How it does well critically, Christmas might affect how much value the role has to actors with names to actually take on. If you see what I mean,
sure.
if it's not carrying the value, if it's not carrying the industry credibility that it once had, if you know, because it obviously had a hit last year with Series 9. And the bad press it had there, regardless of whether you want to believe it was doing fine and iPlayer saved it or whatever, could that affect who would actually want to do the role, or would it not, or would they go for an unknown? I mean, they should go for unknowns, I think, maybe. But so I think in a sense Christmas could be quite interesting to see the perception of it for the next year, and whether that could affect casting at all, and we'll never know. But
well, indeed. I mean, we won't know who's been cast until they've been cast, obviously.
I'm hot now. I'm having to take the scarf off.
Oh, right. Okay. I thought you were talking about it in showbiz terms. I thought you were suggesting that you might be cast.
No, I think I've long passed my chances there. So, sorry, you were saying?
Yeah, I've completely gone. We don't know who's been cast. Obviously, no one's been cast yet. We don't know who they've been speaking to, Chris Chibnall's team, and not 100%. And it would suggest that the way things are at the moment, it's going to be sometime next year when a casting is made and announced. So, you know, it is all up in the air. Aidan Turner would be a good choice, in my opinion, but I do kind of, because, you know, he would have a combination of sort of, there'd be a bit of a David Tennant-esque heartthrobness going on there, I think, which would bring back a certain demographic that may not be watching Peter Capaldi as the Doctor. On the other hand, I've felt that the problems with Series 9 in terms of audience figures, I'm pretty certain they were at least 50% down to its scheduling. So
yes, I think that, but I think you're right. I mean, whether you want to sort of say the problems were with Series 9, there is no doubt that if you get the right charismatic heartthrob in your lead role, you're going to boost your ratings and your profile.
Yeah. And I know, if you're going to bring in an older actor, which Peter Capaldi is, and no disrespect to him, because I think he's a wonderful actor, and he's wonderful as the Doctor, but he is an older guy, and, you know, it's been done back with the original Doctor Who. If you've got an older actor playing the Doctor, then you have a guy who's young and good-looking alongside. And, you know, other than Clara's boyfriend in a handful of episodes, that just didn't happen.
It is funny that, I mean, aside from the Pertwee era, which I'm afraid, sorry, Unit Gang, I don't think any of them were considered heartthrobs.
Oh, poor John Levine.
Bless him. Sweet guys, maybe, that you'd want to take home to meet your grandmother or something, Mr. Levine. But I think you're right. I mean, it is interesting that people forget, you know, when you did have William Hartnell, who was meant to be the old one, you had Stephen and you had Ian and you had Ben to float that. And even when they were thinking of getting an older Doctor for Pertwee, you obviously had Harry Sullivan, which, again, heartthrob, I'm not sure, but he was certainly the action point. So yeah, I think you're right. And again, as we've said before, people do tend to forget that old wasn't actually that synonymous with classic Doctor Who. You know, Tom Baker was not an old actor when he played him.
He's 40.
Yeah, absolutely.
As I am now.
Exactly. Peter Davison, again, I know he was obviously a young'un. You know, McCoy was in his 40s, so was Colin Baker, as I recall. Was he late 30s?
Yeah, in that neck of the woods, yeah.
He was in that sort of neck of the woods. You know, Patrick Troughton was you know, a mature man, but he wasn't, I wouldn't have considered him an old man when he was doing that. And even Pertwee, for his flashy white, you know, grey hair, yeah, I mean,
Pertwee
he
was,
slowly,
50,
he was
but he, you know, he had the chops, didn't he, as they say these days. He, you
absolutely.
Know,
but
he was an action guy.
To be fair, I mean, Capaldi's not that, you know, unaction. He's done a good job. But the point being is that people who sort of say the Doctor should be an old character, old actor, you know, and then when obviously we're not even talking about McGann, it's never, that's not really a truth. It's always been a bit of a mix, a sort of, and the medium sort of hits around 40, probably, late 30s, early 40s. So going to someone like Aidan Turner, a little younger maybe, but again, it's a catchment which has proven to work for the character. I mean, Tennant was a good Doctor. Whether people who disagree with it, you know, like him personally, or thought he was too emo or whatever, boring things, you know, truncations of character that people like that, he fit the role like Tom Baker did. So, you know, if you've got something which feels real, it's not too young to, even Matt Smith did good and he was young as well. So I don't think there's any mistake in sort of doing this, especially if the show has been floundering a little bit. And you do make sure that you get an actor who has got the acting qualities to play it off, and it's not just a looks role. And they've never been stupid enough to do that. So, I mean, that was what was great with Matt Smith, was is that he did, even though he was young, he was a very unusual looking actor. So he was, there was no conventions to him at all.
He's grown into his face a bit, doesn't he?
And he seems, and Tennant again, even though he's a, you know, he's, people think he's a heartthrob, you know, as terms of models go, he's not got, you know, those natural conventions of attractiveness. He's got a great smile, and he's got good eyes, and not saying he's not attractive, I'm just saying he hasn't got those standard, you know, generic conventions of attractiveness. He, like Matt Smith, the sort of people who create attractiveness, don't they? Because the role imbues them with an interest which makes people find them attractive, and that makes them attractive, which makes the standard of what is attractive change as well.
Yeah.
Like Gillian Anderson, you know, was it 1999 best looking woman in the world? And she's got great eyes again, and she's got a lovely smile, but those conventions of, you know, what considered, you know, the generic conventions of female form or whatever, she's not in that mold. She created that through personality and exposure, which is great. Nothing better than people who defy the boringness of convention.
Absolutely.
So yeah, no.
Yeah.
So I know I'm long-windedly saying, yeah, I agree with you. I think someone like Aidan Turner, that age is probably a really good move for the show, but we'll see.
We will see. And so that's the end of this week's podcast with a K. We have a new episode of Coaxial coming along in a couple of days.
Good.
Although, you know, in theory, you might have already heard it by the time this goes out. It depends how things go. I've got a blues show tonight that I'm broadcasting live, so that'll be fun. We will be back, James and I, and with Brian, talking about Boomtown. Until next time.